Yo, what's good? And welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, April 14th, 2022. I'm Jenna Garcia, and joining me is Tim motherfucking Geddes. What is good, Tim?
Everything, Janet, everything. Wow. It's been a while since I've done a show with you. Excited to be back with you, especially on Games Daily. So this is going to be a fun one. Some fun news today. The stories I was looking through, I'm like, I don't know if any of these are the most exciting thing, but I was like, you know what? Me and Janet, we're going to find the gold. We're going to find the gold in each and every story.
We always do. Yeah, the Garcia Geddes Information Squad. It's back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, always a good time. Well, let's just go ahead and jump right into it with today's stories, which include Witcher 3's next-gen delay, Niantic's new AR game, Phil Fish surfacing for Fez's 10-year anniversary, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. We're each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you are watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. It's one of those things where, like, because of the noise cancellation that I have running, I never really know if anyone hears me slam the desk.
Oh, it came just through. Know, it came through.
Just know, I'm always slamming the desk, okay? I'd never forget to slam the desk.
Even if we don't hear it, you can feel it through the sheer right? veracity.
I'm like, there's like a light shake,
visuals.
You know? It's like, mm-hmm. We're really going for like a 4D level experience. You remember, did you ever do the one of those 4D, the theater
did
things?
Did I ever
love
do
so much.
The Janet, pickles with the SpongeBob one? Like, I feel like everyone went to that one specifically.
Last week, did I watch Sonic the Hedgehog 2 in 4DX? Yes, I did.
Really? What
this week,
like?
Did I watch it again in 4DX? Yes, I did. I enjoyed the movie and the 4DX experience so much. When I went to see it a second time, I was like, I'm only watching it in 4D, baby. You got to go fast, everybody.
So what does that mean? Like, does the chair, like, start zooping? Are you, like, are you just hear the coins, like,
Janet,
underneath
it's,
you? Like,
it's Janet, everything. It's
next
everything.
Time you're in SF, we're going to a 4DX movie.
Yeah, and I've actually never done a full 4D movie. I've only done like the 4D experiences. Like, mm-hmm. Universal, I think, had one for a while with, like, I kind of want to say, I've got to figure out what IP it was. And then there was a SpongeBob one I did once at Navy Pier in Chicago. But that's it. Like, I've never done like the full runtime. So that sounds kind of horrifying, but I'm down to
it
try
is.
It.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, it is too much. In the absolute best way possible.
Do they punch you still? Because I remember getting punched in the back.
Yeah, they punch you in the back hard.
I don't really like. That's the thing that
Janet,
it goes a little too far for me.
It's about being immersed. You gotta.
You just gotta get immersed. Gotta get immersed.
That's what I'm trying to do here on Twitch, just in general. Like, I want to have the first, like, what's probably not the first, the first 4D stream, right? I get a fan going. There's like mist and stuff. Like, it's a whole production. Mm-hmm. But on that note, remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be part of the show, head over to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. Some housekeeping for you. Tim, we got some stuff going on. What is
a lot of stuff over on youtube.com/kindafunny. Things have just been popping off. Of course, we have the latest episode of the Kinda Funny podcast that if you haven't listened to, it is a very, very, very sad episode, but also a very special episode where we remember the life of Portillo, the wiener dog. So you can check that out. But if you're looking for something a little bit more uplifting, we've been having a ton of different reviews over on the screencast. We had Everything Everywhere All at Once, which Kev, I heard you watched. We're going to have to talk about that later. Jurassic Park in review. View is going on. Episode 1 went live last week. Today on Patreon, we're recording The Lost World Jurassic Park. Sure to be a fun time. And of course, Moon Knight continues to happen every week. So go check that out. And finally, Nick and Mike both did a trailer reaction to Stranger Things Season 4. So in the entertainment world, things are popping off, everybody.
It's entertainment review season, sort of, mm-hmm. maybe. Maybe not. I don't know if you guys would do review season over there, you know.
It never ends.
Different smells in the air for that one. Mm-hmm. And thank you to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brandy, Pranksy, and Anonymous. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and MapleStory, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five scores today.
A baker's dozen.
Five. Starting with the lead, Witcher 3's next-gen delay. This comes over from Amelia Zollner at IGN, who writes, CD Projekt announced it is delaying the next-gen version of Witcher 3 Wild Hunt indefinitely. and will no longer be releasing the upgrade in quarter two. Part of the delay may have to do with the change in the developer. Previously, the update was being developed externally by Saber Interactive, but CD Projekt Red has elected to bring the remainder of the game's development in-house. Quote, we have decided to have our in-house development team conduct the remaining work on the next-gen version of The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, a recent tweet on The Witcher's account reads. We are currently evaluating the scope of work to be done and thus have to postpone quarter two release until further notice. We'll update you as soon as we can. Thank you for understanding. The upcoming free upgrade is intended to visually and technically enhance the PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X versions of the game, which was originally released in 2015. The upgrade was originally planned for a late 2021 release, but faced initial delays based on recommendations supplied by persons supervising development, according to a 2021 tweet. While this next-gen version is currently facing delays, CD Projekt Red is continuing to expand on The Witcher. Last month, the company announced that a new Witcher game is also in development. Tim, react.
You know, it's interesting when you look at, we were on the Gamescast yesterday, which is also a fantastic episode talking about Game of the Year so far. You can check out right now. We talked a lot about Bethesda, and we talked about Starfield, and if we think it's going to come out this year, the kind of pressures that put on that game for a multitude of reasons, but specifically talking about these giant Western RPGs, right? And these iconic companies that have created them. And in recent years, I feel like all the big ones, whether it's Bethesda or BioWare or CD Projekt Red, have all had extreme hits and extreme misses, and are all kind of in a similar situation right now where all eyes are on their next moves and like what is the right step forward. And you kind of see groups like BioWare and CD Projekt Red almost using the easy answer as a band-aid of let's go back to Mass Effect, let's go back to Witcher 3, right? And it's interesting to look at where CD Projekt Red is right now, where Cyberpunk is what it is, was what it was, is going to continue to be that thing for a while. And, you know, they're making little incremental increases here and there, but it still isn't what people wanted or expected. And at the end of the day, it wasn't at the right time. But with this, it does feel like they're kind of trying to announce a lot of things and kind of just get that positive energy out there and that goodwill building again towards the next Witcher release, like the next big proper Witcher release. So all these little things I think are adding up where I don't think that there is a ridiculous amount of people that are clamoring for the Witcher 3 Wild Hunt next gen updates. However, there will be a ridiculous amount of people that play it when it comes out. So it's kind of a less a chicken and the egg situation and more they might as well talk about this as early as possible because it is just going to get people excited. Now, the backside of that is when you have to delay it and when the plans start changing and all of a sudden all the news about it starts to sound a little bit negative. You know, I think we're obviously still in the pandemic. We're still in the situation where so many different factors on top of just plans going awry are affecting game development and promotional strategy for things. So I think CD Projekt Red's in a really tough spot right now. And I don't know that they're handling it the best possible way, but I do think that we always talk about the transparency of things. And I think in recent times they have been very transparent of, hey, this has happened. It sucks, but it's happening. Here's why. You could like that reason or not. It's the why. And it's just kind of, it's never a fun place to be, but it is reality.
Yeah. I think too, like, it's kind of interesting looking at this specifically because oftentimes we don't get quite as much information on like why something is delayed. Usually it's just it's taking longer than we thought, or like we're still not done, like, which is usually why things are, you know, delayed or late given any type of project. I think this one really paints a picture of the team that initially had it, like, didn't, at least to some people, have the sauce like that. And that's no indictment on the team itself. I think, you know, whenever you're trying to like touch something and like kind of redo something that's so iconic, there's a lot of different things to factor in because you're not making something from scratch. You're like trying to replicate something, but also enhance it, like make it different enough that it feels like it is new and fresh and that you don't feel like you're playing something old, but also not undoing the old elements that make people like it for what it is. And I think that mm-hmm. is a really big challenge. And that's why so often, like, it's a rarity to get, you know, remakes or remasters that, you know, totally feel like they're moving the needle, because usually it's just like, I mean, it's nicer, you know, it's definitely the best way to play it. Like, that's kind of a happy medium for people to land, versus, you know, like, if you take too many risks with things, you might end up going too far in one direction or another. But this reminds me a lot, you know, I think especially you and I, like, having such an affinity for Nintendo, of like what happened with Metroid, where they were like, actually, like, someone else is gonna take, like, it just didn't end up working out. And I think both this comment of, you know, we're moving and bringing it in-house, and then the previous reason for the delay of, like, it's not really, like, going the way we want it to go. It's not, you know, it's not quite up to snuff, and given that, like, it's going to take longer. And then it makes sense, too, I think, for it to be indefinite. I do think the indefinite feels like it weighs really heavy, which is why, like, they didn't use that language. Like, you know, that was, like, the contextualization. They were like, we're going to let you know later, because I think indefinite just sounds so negative. But at the same time, it makes sense, because if they are bringing it now in-house, potentially, like, we don't know how much from scratch they're starting. We don't really know how it's no surprise that they don't know how long it's going to take them to get this out the door.
So an interesting thing coming up in chat now that even gives more context to this and reframes, I think, in a very interesting way. Dcash is saying apparently it was related to Saber being in Russia. So that would make a lot of sense, them taking it from the Russia team that was working on the port, and now taking it in-house. It's like that explains the why a little bit more, obviously with the state of the world right now of where things are at. But again, that's just kind of where things are, and they always have been this way, where like world events are going to affect game development. But I just think that with where we're at currently, CD Projekt Red is facing a lot of that from many different angles, on top of kind of like problematic launch of Cyberpunk, which has its effects in a bunch of different ways, whether it's just kind of the media's takes on CD Projekt Red as a company, where, you know, we're not going to get a story about Witcher 3 without Cyberpunk's bad launch being brought up, right? And like, that sucks, but that just kind of is how the conversations go with this type of thing. So adding on a bunch of real world real stuff is like sucky.
Yeah, I think the potential good news for them is, like, that's the story until it isn't, right? Like, we're only going to mention, you know, CD Projekt's in the context of Cyberpunk until, I mean, I think it'll always kind of be attached to them to some degree. But if The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt comes out and it's good, like, that'll be one of the, like, more recent, like, ways that people will contextualize what the studio has been working on. So I do think definitely this is a big deal for them. My question for you is, when do you think we're getting this game? And then how close to, like, the next game launch do you think it's going to be? Is it going to be like a, hey, Witcher 3 Wild Hunt's dropping and then we're going into new Witcher? Or is it going to be like much larger of a gap than that? It's just so hard to imagine them both doing this next gen version and then also, you know, building something new on top of that, which, granted, they likely have been working on it long before they announced it. I don't think they're like, hey, let's make this and then tweet that we're making it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this just being a next gen upgrade, like, I don't think it's not going to be like this giant remake type thing. So with that, I imagine we're not getting the next Witcher for years. And I think that is an easy, safe bet. And I think we are going to get this. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we get it this year. I'd also be not surprised if we end up getting it sometime next year. But it being set for Q2 2022 is like, well, we still got Q3, Q4. Like, there's a lot of time in 2022 even that it could launch. And I mean, I don't think it's like that big of a project that is impossible. But again, with the state of the world, like, maybe it is impossible. And if so, then yeah, it's going to slide a little bit. But I don't think that the ramp up time on this is going to be that long. I imagine that worst case scenario, we're going to get this by Q2 2023.
And then also, like, I don't know if you've played like The Witcher 3 or if you're a Witcher 3 fan, but, you know, commenting on that. And then also, do you think they're going to stick the landing on this if you had to predict on how this launch is going to go for them?
Oh, I mean, I'm not a Witcher guy. Just I'm not a big open RPG guy, open world RPG guy. But I obviously understand the respect that Witcher 3 has as a defining video game moment. I mean, look, maybe I'll like be kicking myself for saying this later. I can't see this going wrong. Like, this is, it's just an next gen upgrade. Like, it's just one of the best games of all time running better. So I don't know. I feel like they're not over promising on this. So it's like, we can't be disappointed. Now, I'm sure we can find ways to be disappointed, but I think overall, like, I don't think that this is gonna, I think this is gonna be what people expect it to be.
Yeah.
Which I think is the biggest thing CD Projekt Red needs is to nail expectations.
I do think it's funny though in the chat, Last Glass Gaming, clip it. You guys are straight up evil. Like, it's so mean. But no, I mean, I agree with that. I feel like we haven't had many, if any, definitely let me know in the chat or Tim, if you have any memory of, you know, horror stories of next gen upgrades. I think that's the closest we've had, is that it usually takes people longer than they think it's going to take for them to make the upgrade, but they seem to have gone fine. And like, maybe again, GTA Trilogy, that's not a next gen thing. That's like a remastered collection.
That's totally different.
Yeah. Like, another example would be GTA 5, which went fine. I mean, I think some people maybe would wish it ran even better than it does, but I don't think anyone's like, oh, why is this not like working correctly? It seems pretty smooth. So you know, we'll have to see.
With next gen upgrades, I think the biggest pain point has been the multi-system situation, where Xbox handles it so much better than PlayStation, and just there's just too many steps involved with getting your saves downloaded and all that stuff, and which version of the game you're downloading on PlayStation. Like, and a lot of that stuff has been solved in the last year that the PS5's been out. We're still not perfectly there, but like, it has been, there's been a lot of solutions, and I think that that has been the biggest issue with next gen upgrades.
Yeah, the like, I still have to think a little bit on PlayStation, which I would like to not have to have any thoughts when I sit down in front of my console. But yeah, we are better from the, I downloaded it, and then like, I accidentally downloaded kind of both, and then when I click it, I'm like, who do I have here? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, I'm just gonna redo this whole thing. Yeah, that definitely has been, I think, a lot more of the talking point in the conversation around next gen. So yeah, we'll see when this is. I think you're also spot on for like next gen Witcher. That probably would, that would not surprise me if that's like something that I'm playing on like the PlayStation 6 or the Xbox 7th heaven or whatever they're gonna call it. moving on, let's talk Pokemon Go developer Niantic making an AR pet game called Peridot. Every time I read this name, and some Andrew Upser over at The Verge, every time I read this name, Peridot, I read period. Because,
me too,
like, but it's that thing where, like, your mind, if the first letter and the last is, like, even though period doesn't end with a T, but y'all know what I mean. Like, it's just a little too close, right?
It definitely is, and I read it as period, too, but I read it specifically, and I don't even know what a reference this is. So someone in the chat, or Kevin, if you know, let me know. But the what movie or show is it? It might even be, like, a cartoon where someone's like, period.
Oh, that does sound like something. I also read it as like
Pidgeotto saying,
I also read it a little bit like when people say, because sometimes people will like add extra letters to period to be like, period.
Everyone's saying Steven Universe.
No, I hear it like, period.
It's Peridot.
Yeah, I didn't watch Steven Universe, so it's not that, but
maybe it's still went into your mind somehow.
Yeah.
Anyway, this isn't the main thing about this game, but it is the first thing that I noticed. Like, literally, I like YouTube did it. I'm like, has anyone said this name aloud? How do I read this? Why am I reading it wrong every time? But let's get into what this actually is. So Niantic, of course, the developer behind the blockbuster success Pokemon Go, has announced its next augmented reality game. And once again, it's full of adorable creatures called Peridot. We're gonna get through this. The game is all about caring for and breeding magical critters. Think of it like Pokemon Go cross with Tamagotchi with some real world AR elements tossed in. Here's the basic premise, according to Niantic. After thousands of years of slumber, Peridots are waking to a world vastly different from the one in which they used to roam, and they'll need your help to protect them from extinction. Practically speaking, this means you'll be caring for creatures by training, feeding, and playing with them, helping them grow from cute little babies to full-grown adults, before eventually breeding more. One of the defining aspects...
You jumping into that, into the VO voice there.
The word right picture. There.
Yeah. You committed hard enough that for a moment you sounded exactly like Ash Ketchum from the Pokemon cartoon.
Thank you. That's honestly, I get impressive. That a lot. That's, you know, really goals over there. You know, clipping it out for the VO reel. Does my voice sound the same when I do any voice? Yes. Is that a problem? Not for my first project. Whoever gets me after might have some issues. But for the first one, who's going to know?
That was good. That was good, Janet.
Who's going to know? Who's to say, right? We have technology. Pitch it up, pitch it down. We'll figure it out. One of the defining aspects of Peridots is that every creature is unique. They all look different through a combination of handcrafted assets and procedural generation, which is, I'm going to get it all out there. I have so many thoughts. And have distinct personality traits. Niantic says they also have their own DNA. This ties into the breeding aspect, which the developer says is patterned after the way DNA works in real life. There are different creature archetypes like unicorn or cheetah, and these can be blended during by breeding to create all new adorable little critters. And no, despite being all unique digital assets, the peridots are not NFTs. It's a really interesting idea, and it's something that we're obviously looking at. Senior producer Zaya Fogel tells The Verge, but right now we're focusing on testing and refining the core gameplay experience to ensure it's really fun and accessible. Like Niantic's previous games, including most recently Pikmin Bloom, much of the gameplay requires going out in the real world. This can mean searching for nests in the wild, which are required for breeding, or satisfying the needs of your peridot by going for a walk or finding a specific food. It should be noted that despite a storyline about saving a species from extinction, there is no death in peridot. There is no punitive element to the game. The creatures will not die. Instead, we try to reward players for coming back and playing with their creatures more often, says Fogel. Similarly, AR appears to be a large component. So, you know, just like in Pokemon Go, we have things like recognizing, you know, the dirt versus the sand versus the concrete, the grass, etc. While the new game doesn't have a specific release date, Niantic says it will be rolling out in select markets in April on both the App Store and Google Play, while additional markets will be added as testing and iteration during soft launch as the soft launch continues. Tim, what's your history with like AR gaming? Like, were you a Pokemon Go guy, and are you interested in checking this out?
I was into Pokemon Go for that beautiful moment in 2016 for as long as I think most people were. And then the hardcore kind of stayed on, and then Niantic kept kind of delivering for them for a long time. Like, not without fault, but I think they did a really good job of continuing to support that game with new generations of Pokemon, just new gameplay mechanics and all of that, and just quality of life stuff. Niantic are extremely cool. I love what they do. I love that they are kind of pushing AR in a gamified way that actually makes sense in a way that gamers want to interact with. And I think that that is a tall order, and it's surprising that we haven't seen it successfully copied more often. Like, there was that Ghostbusters one that Greg was into because he's Greg. But with this is an interesting story because there was a couple projects they did that weren't as successful. If I remember correctly, Niantic also did the Pikmin one.
Bloom
recently, yeah, and that was like, I don't think I ever heard about it at all except for it happening, like that it was going to happen. I don't even know if it did
playing
happen.
It I don't know how hot that means it is, like I haven't like looked at the numbers of the hype, but I feel like that one was okay. Like, I feel cool. Like it wasn't Pokemon Go, but I feel like people are playing
and
it.
that's the thing, is it doesn't need to be Pokemon Go. Very few things can be Pokemon Go. That is a level of success that is unheard of, and to compare it to that I think is a little bit unnecessary and like not really helpful for any real data. But this story is interesting to me because you got to look at the why, right? And the fact that all of the words in this are just dancing around, we want to make a lot of money off of what we did, but like, we don't want to deal with Pokemon because we don't own it, and we have to deal with Pokemon Company, and we can just do it ourselves, and we're not going to do NFTs. But then, you know what? Maybe we will do NFTs. I don't know. But we just want to make the money from it. Like, that's all I'm hearing from this. And at some point, like, they're saying they're not doing NFTs, so just taking the word for it right now, at least. This doesn't sound like a horrible thing. People love Tamagotchi, and Tamagotchi didn't have Pokemon. Right? Like, those are just little creatures that people wanted to take care of and love. So I don't know that you necessarily need the Pokemon license for this to work. Will this be anywhere near the fraction as successful as Pokemon Go? No. But I do think it has that built-in Pokemon Go audience of the people that are still playing that every day. Giving them one more app to open up and one more thing to do, I think, is doubling down on an installed audience that they already have. And the fact that this is all mobile-based, like, this is probably a really smart business move from Niantic to do. I don't think it's that exciting. I will never touch this, but I do think that it makes a lot of sense.
You don't want to raise cute creatures and see them grow with you?
Not my thing.
I'm actually kind of into this. And I skipped out on Pikmin Bloom just because, I don't know. I think, too, like, it's honestly Pikmin baggage, to be, if I'm being frank. Like, I'm like, I don't know when we're getting the next game. Like, I barely played, what is it? Was it Pikmin 3 Deluxe? I forgot what the full name of the one on Switch. Yeah. You know, I played that. I had a great time. That was probably my first, like, front to back, like, going through a whole Pikmin game. And it was so funny because I was like playing it with my boyfriend because it's like multiplayer. And he was like, this is great. When's the next one coming? And I'm like, oh, man, I got some bad news. So I think I just didn't want to deal with like the Pikmin thing element of that. But there was like a lot of cuteness to be had there. I like that this feels like a nice in between. At least gameplay wise, I'm not sure how into the weeds like the breeding mechanic is going to be. But what seems cool to me about Pikmin Bloom is that you're just like out there, you're walking and the Pikmin get cute hats. I'm like, cool. But like, I don't, you know, and I'm sure there's more to the game than that. But just kind of the elevator pitch is that Pokemon Go, it started initially as just like catching. But now we all, but even from like the very like beginning parts, you still had some level of like gyms that you could take over. And granted, it was like a really, really, really simplistic mechanic that they've since kind of evolved on, but like it had some of those base elements in there. While this is like, I just want to be by myself. I just want to be by myself with my creatures. They look cute. This seems cool. I will say, the procedural generation is interesting because I feel like that has been a very like hit and miss thing in gaming in general. Like sometimes that really works, sometimes it doesn't. So I'm like, when I read that, I'm like, what kind of fucked up animals are going to come out of this by accident? You know, am I going to get like this demented unicorn that I have to take care of that I can't do anything with? Like, I don't know. And then I just think it's some of the stuff is, you know, I like the ideas behind it. So I don't mean to like, you know, make a mockery of like what they have going on. But I do think it's funny to say it's patterned the way DNA works in real life. I mean, this is getting too like, you know, science. We knew that we could, but should we have, you know, for real?
We've already seen that taken to the nth degree with Digimon. I don't know how familiar you are, but their whole premise was, hey, what if this wolf mated with a machine gun? So I feel like whatever Peridot ends up doing is going to be a little less crazy than that. But also, we can hope it's not. You know, I'm a big fan of wolf machine guns with sword arms, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, it looks like it's going for something a little bit cuter. But yeah, this could be cool. At the same time, like, I think AR gaming is just such a like unique and specific kind of mobile gaming because it's sort of like a casual check-in, run in the background thing that I feel like can be satisfying to a certain degree, but also like is weird in that you're like never playing it super hardcore, but you also have to live in it. So I'm like, I don't really, you know, I'm still kind of developing what relationships I want to have with ongoing games, which I think AR kind of falls into that category. But yeah, you know, I might fuck around, sign up for the beta, see what's out there. Why not? It doesn't cost me anything. Pokemon Sleep's not out yet. I have time on my hands. So yeah,
can't sleep
I've
till
been,
then.
I haven't, no, I have been awake for years. It's really starting to take a toll on me. You know, speaking of sleep, maybe that's why Pedro Pascal hasn't finished The Last of Us yet. This comes from Logan Plant over at IGN. The headline's a little different because the one I first saw, like I got hit with that AB headline thing. And I'm like, what was the headline that I initially had seen for this? Don't know what it is. That's my fake one that I made up. So Pedro Pascal, who is set to play Joel in the upcoming Last of Us series on HBO, says the show it really is made for people that love The Last of Us. And then the article then goes to a bunch of like different quotes from pulling from a GQ interview that source. So I'm just going to jump down to when it gets into the Last of Us part, which is the gaming relevant part. Pascal also said he hasn't finished the Last of Us video game, but not due to lack of effort. It's so sad. I haven't any skill, Pascal says. I tried, you know? And then it was only a matter of minutes before I had to hand it over to my nephew. It really takes a specific kind of skill, and I don't have it. He went on to say he watched his nephew play a big chunk of the game before stopping to create a healthy distance between Troy Baker's original portrayal of Joel and his own. I found Joel so impressive. I found the whole of it such a visually impressive experience. And then I got worried that I would want to imitate it too much, which I think could be right in some circumstances and then a mistake in others. So really, this stood out to me because I just thought it was, you know, there's a funny element, right, of the gaming side of it, I think. But also, I feel like it's going to be interesting to see what his portrayal of Joel ends up being. But what about you? What's your gut reaction here?
I mean, I just love it. I love the quote. It's so sad. I haven't any skill. I love you, Joe. I love you so much.
What's the last game that you've said that about? Or are you like, I've conquered? I know you came over, you got over Sifu. Like, you got over that hurdle and you became a Sifu master, which I feel like I was so salty about that, Tim. Like, I love to see you shine. So, like, shots of you shining. But at the same time, when Sifu first was like dropping, this was like pre-embargo. Like, I remember like texting Blessing about like my struggles and like where I'm at. And he's like, oh no, you're doing pretty good. Like, you know, and not like in a shade way, but he's like, Tim is like super old at a level one. Like, you're doing way better than you think you are. And I'm like, cool, Bless, but I still can't do it.
Exactly.
And then, I mean, where was the lie? Right, here was a report. It was factual reporting.
Yeah.
And then I turn around and I watch y'all's, you know, speed run of it, the 1v4, 4v4, whatever speed run, which was super fun. Check it out if you haven't already. And Tim's out here just rocking with the best of them. And I'm like, Tim, I thought you and I were like down here in the dirt with the normies. So, you know, have you ever really been met with gaming strife the way Pedro Pascal has?
Oh, absolutely. So many times. And I'd like very specific types of challenging games. Obviously, things like Cuphead, very up my alley. That is something that I very much enjoy. And it's funny because I'm so particular about the stuff where it's like things like Mega Man, I do not fuck with. Like, I do not like the idea of having to do long things over and over and over if I fail. But the idea of Cuphead is like, you're just straight at the boss. Go. And if you mess up, you just start there again. And it's never going to take you too long.
I also don't like Mega Man for the same reason. Yeah. It's too much pattern recognition. And he jumps weird to me. It's a very specific feel, you know what I mean?
There's like a weird arch to it. Like, get out of here.
Like, it's something's not like, if you grew up with him, maybe you're like, this is who he is. But like coming in cold like a few years ago, I'm like, this don't feel right.
Mega Man is fantastic, but it is just not my cup of tea when it comes to this stuff. But anyways, yeah, there have been many games that I'm just like, this is just not happening, and that's okay. That's okay. But Pedro Pascal is fantastic. I love him. Everything he's in, I enjoy a little bit more because he's in it. I first saw him in Game of Thrones, and he took my heart. I was absolutely blown away by his character, and like I think that he his portrayal of Oberyn in Game of Thrones was so key to that show's success to me, where it was like, that was we're in the middle, we're in the thick of things, we already have so many fan favorite characters, how are they going to add another character that I'm just completely into? And the answer was Pedro Pascal. So you take that, you add him to The Mandalorian. I love him in that. I've loved him in every single thing that I've seen. So him being Joel in The Last of Us is very exciting to me, because I am of the belief that I want media adaptations of video games to have the core of what makes that franchise special. And I think that means something different for each and every franchise. I'm out here glowing about Sonic the Hedgehog 2, not because I think that it adapted the games perfectly or that it did the best movie experience of all time from a film standpoint, but I do think that it had the perfect mesh of translating Sonic the Hedgehog and his friends into a 2-hour movie. And I think that when we look at things like Halo, I know everyone's all over the place on that show. I've watched a couple episodes now, and every episode I watch, I like less and less and less. And I think it's because it doesn't speak to what makes Halo Halo to me in any way, shape, or form. I don't care that they changed the story. It's just the story they're giving me doesn't feel like an authentically Halo story. The fact that they refuse to use the music, I fucking hate. But guess what Last of Us is doing? It's going to use the music. Like, to me, that is such a core part of what makes Last of Us special. And like, at the end of the day, you can look at anything and be like, oh, it's just a this, it's just a that. Last of Us is just another zombie apocalypse story. It's another small group of people out on the run trying to just care for each other. And who's the real threat? Is it the monsters or is it us? Like, how many times have we seen that?
Is it The Last of Us?
Is it? I don't know. But the thing about Last of Us that's special is these characters and is the tone and is the music and is so many little tiny things that add up to be more than just another thing that we've seen before. So I like that everything that I'm hearing here. I like that we know that the Joel we're getting is going to be so inspired by Troy's performance, but it's also going to be something that is unique and different because Pedro's going to bring that. And so all this, I could not be more excited for The Last of Us show. I have extremely high hopes. I think it's going to piss off a lot of people because guess what? The games piss off a lot of people, but that doesn't matter. I think that this is going to be a truly phenomenal thing. Show.
It's like it's the Star Wars syndrome where it's like, oh yeah, I love this, but I hate everything about it. I hate everyone who likes it or doesn't like it. Well, I don't know. I think this will be a little bit less controversial than like how like Last of Us 2 was in terms of like the differing feedback or like the, because I don't think they're going to deviate too much. So I'd be surprised if like the content of the show itself felt like super off-putting in any way. But I'm curious to see, how they execute like certain scenes, like what they decide to focus on, how they're doing the pacing of it. And then also like the nuance of kind of filling in the additional gaps, I guess, that are inherently created when you have a video game. Because with a few exceptions, you know, people always joke that like Kojima's games, you're just sitting down and watching a movie, which there are like really long cutscenes. Most games don't have cutscenes that are like too crazy long. So the idea of like taking that scene and like how do we like add this sort of movie TV show element to it when we normally would be playing through this, and like how do we create, because like there's, you know, inherent tension and intrigue created through like the act of controlling. So it's like, okay, how are we going to fill those gaps and what set pieces will be created? You know, I think a lot of times in gaming, you might look back on your own play experience, and even if something as like linear as a campaign, you have your own stories from certain games of like crazy things that happen to you. And I think certainly for like my experience with The Last of Us, there's like really close calls or like areas I really struggled with. Like I remember having like a really hard time like getting through like the initial like subway where you have to like get the ladder and there's like people everywhere, and your friends are like darting at full speed back and forth, and I'm like, y'all, this is stressing me out. Like, I'm just trying to quietly get my Band-Aid. So I'm excited to see how that ends up getting replicated. And I'm curious to know like how far into the game he watched too, because I think there's some pretty crazy stuff that happens in Last of Us. And as someone that had started that game several times over, I remember being like kind of having an idea of what this game was and then getting further into it and really seeing so much more that I think impressed me and like disturbed me and was interesting. So I'm excited to see, like, I think it's actually kind of cool that he has had this like a base understanding of like, here's Joel, here's his attitude, some of his motivations. And then for maybe some of those more interesting, like, you know, winter scenes and things, we'll get to see kind of a more like fresh take on the character. So yeah, I think that's gonna be really cool. And I respect the transparency of like, you know what? I didn't have it. It's rough. Sometimes you just don't have it. And I'm like, you know what? It also kind of makes me feel like, wow, I'm like real pro gamer here playing The Last of Us, even though The Last of Us is not a hard game. But I'm like, you know, like there is a skill to be had here, you know, something worth celebrating.
Totally. And the last thing I want to say about this is at the end of the day, you know, he's played enough of this, seen enough of it, understands Troy's performance. But we have Neil Druckmann that's going to be directing this. It's going to be there, like, directing Pedro himself in the same way he directed Troy, with whatever nuance or changes or keeping things the same that he wants to do. And that, to me, I think, is the difference between a lot of the other things we've talked about and Last of Us on HBO. Like, there was just already so much more chance of success because it is from the same group of people and the same minds that made the first thing we love so much.
Exactly. And speaking of things we love, remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. I love MeUndies. You guys have heard me talk about MeUndies for years at this point. I'm always wearing the MeUndies shirt, the MeUndies lounge pants, the MeUndies undies, the MeUndies socks. I can go on and on and on. If MeUndies putting out a product, chances are Tim Gettys is wearing them. The MeUndies membership is literally designed to make your life easier with free shipping and returns on every order, savings on virtually everything they make, exclusive sales, and early access to their newest stuff. There's kind of no reason not to join. Get super soft undies, bralettes, or socks shipped directly to your door and live a more comfortable life knowing you always have what you need at your fertips when you step out of the shower. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you. Any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off. For a limited time, if you sign up for their free-to-join MeUndies membership, you can get 25% off your first membership item. To get 25% off your first membership item or 15% off your first order and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. Funny. Shout out to Maple Story for sponsoring this episode. After 17 years of rich MMO gameplay wrapped in a unique 2D side scroller, Maple Story is ready to proudly lean into its cute pixelated aesthetic. The aggressively cute campaign aims to showcase the unexpected juxtaposition of cuddly, smiley characters with rich, multi-layered MMO gameplay. The campaign focuses on telling a story of immense character customization, a vast array of weapons and mounts to choose from, a seemingly endless horizon of lands to explore and battle, all while dealing huge amounts of damage to monsters of all shapes shapes and sizes. I know a lot of people out there love Maple stories. So hey, come check out this armed and adorable campaign. This is your world. With over 40 classes and thousands of cosmetic customization options, you can play how you want. And there's just so much good stuff. 18 years of content, no signs of slowing, means you'll never get bored. You can go to maplestory.nexon.net. That's maplestory.nexon.net for more, or you can just click the link in the description.
No Man's Sky creator says the next game is pretty ambitious, says Ishraq Subhan at Eurogamer, who of course points out that this is a very familiar statement. The article reads, "Hello Games, the British studio behind No Man's Sky is working on its next new release. In an interview with IGN, studio co-founder Sean Murray said his next game would be just as ambitious as No Man's Sky. For a while, we've been working on something pretty ambitious in the background. It's a small team, but we like it that way." Murray added that the game was more ambitious than you might expect from a small studio. Similar to No Man's Sky, it's the kind of project that even if we had 1,000 people working on it, it'd still seem impossible. The project is apparently still in very early development, and Murray said No Man's Sky is still being supported, and the two games weren't impacting each other's development. If any of this sounds familiar, you might recall some of the statements made by Murray in the run-up to No Man's Sky's disastrous launch. Murray seems to be aware of that controversial period, telling IGN, "We've learned our lesson. I'm talking about games too early after No Man's Sky's pre-release period." Hello Games yesterday announced No Man's Sky's latest major update, Outlaws, which adds a new pirate underworld and overhauled space combat. Tim, what's your history with No Man's Sky, and what are your feelings on, you know, Hello Games and their future projects? I feel like, you know, the last thing they did was pretty small puzzle game, and now it seems like they're going to be moving to something a lot more grandiose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's No Man's Sky has totally been something that's, I think, really aligned with Kinda Funny's history, because it was 2015 when we left IGN. So, like, kind of covering that game from a hype perspective all the way through launch, all the way through, oh no, things are bad, through, oh, they're fixing it, to, oh, hey, this is a comeback story, like, has kind of been the last 7 years for us. So in that sense, I mean, like, Kevin interviewed Sean Murray for No Man's Sky back in 2015, right? Like, that's really crazy.
What did he say?
A lot of things that were true.
More
ambitious than they had. Did I ask about creating a Death Star and destroying a planet? And he was like, "I don't think that's going to be possible, but maybe."
So at least
he kept something's true for you, Kev. But so, you know, with that, I do think that we got to give props where props are due, and they fixed it. But you also got to look at things and be like, all right, should we be hyping up the next game as pretty ambitious? Maybe not. And I do, again, want to kind of like give the context to this, that this is in an interview. This is not them putting out a big press release of like, hey, our next game is about to be ambitious. This is like us finding a story from an interview, right? And I think that that is a context that we don't talk about enough when we're doing these big stories, because things just spiral out of control and all of a sudden it's just like, what the fuck? Why would they do this? And it's like, I mean, if I'm being honest, oh, Sean, maybe I shouldn't say that even in an interview, because you should know better at this point that these things are going to spiral out of control. But you got to imagine, and no matter what, like, it's not like Sean Murray doesn't care. It's not like he wants to make these mistakes. He wants these games to be ambitious and to be amazing, you know, and like show the dedication to No Man's Sky and beyond, and all the iterations that they've done shows that it's about the passion. Of course, it's about the business and making money, but like, he and the team legitimately care about it. And I think that that is one of the more important aspects of all of this. Again, don't overpromise. Learn lessons from your mistakes. I'm hoping that they learn lessons from their mistakes and they've learned how to make things ambitious in this way and whatever. And I think that they've proven they can in some ways in terms of game development. But I do think that they need to learn from their mistakes in terms of communication, because it's risky business out there.
Yeah, I feel like this one's an interesting one, because obviously, yes, it is funny hearing like No Man's Sky creators say like pretty ambitious, because like, you know, that was the whole deja vu thing from before. But at the same time, like you mentioned, it's just in an interview. And also, everyone says that their project is ambitious. Like, no one ever is like, it's honestly going to be par for the course. Like, it's just, even if that's kind of true in the product we get, they're like, you know, and not that anyone, you know, half-asses like the games they make. But by that, I mean, like, we've definitely seen iterations in a franchise or like projects from teams that feel like fine, right? Like, not every game is like intensely critically acclaimed. And even though we all have different opinions, we can all probably think of a game that we feel like is just okay. The people making it probably didn't feel that when they were making it, right? Like, they were striving for something, you know, unique and interesting and trying to push like their own, like, you know, prowess and learn things and execute on a vision. And then maybe they had to be able to, you know, everyone thinks that their thing's going to be good. Because why else? If they thought it wasn't going to be good, they wouldn't be making it. I think, too, something that helps make this feel like a little bit, you know, different than what we've seen before is seeing, again, Hello Games' history now. They've really turned around with No Man's Sky, and not just like turned it around, no one cares. They have like a really dedicated and passionate community. They're still putting out stuff. The stuff they put out is absolutely wild. And then in between all that, they also had The Last Campfire, which, granted, I didn't spend time with yet. I want to get to it. I believe it's on Apple Arcade, among other platforms. But I feel like that shows that, like, hey, we're not just only making like the most giant, insane games. Like, we're here making things that we want to make, that we care about, that we're interested in, and it shows that they can execute an idea outside of just like that No Man's Sky project and put that out and have that be, you know, I'd say decently successful. I feel like people who played it liked it. I'm assuming it probably did okay numbers wise for them. So the idea of them making something bigger or something next isn't too like crazy. I do think the one line that I'm like, that sounds horrifying, is that if we had thousands of people, it'd still seem impossible. I'm like, that sounds like maybe that could have stayed in the drafts. Like, maybe we didn't need to put that in there. But at the same time, I think about like teams that have made really wild games. Like, you know, I've recently like booted up Dreams and stuff. And I'm like, that game probably could fit that descriptor. So I don't think that that's necessarily a red flag either. It was just kind of like, okay, now we're getting a little too like in the weeds. But what I think this ends up signaling at the end of the day is that, you know, when we hear about this, it's going to be slow rolled. And I think the marketing, like you mentioned, rather than just like, you know, the press part, will be a lot more tame than we've seen previously. And they probably have more people helping out with that kind of stuff too.
Well, I think that that's kind of a, I don't know if more is the right way to put it, but different, I think, is, because you got to remember the context of No Man's Sky and where the hype came from. And it was PlayStation itself, right? Like, the reason that No Man's Sky was hyped to hell and back is because PlayStation was putting it at the forefront. Like, it was the closer of E3s for, I think, multiple years, or at least a big focus of multiple PlayStation E3s during a time where PlayStation was killing E3s. So with that, putting Sean Murray as like one of the main press interviewees out there, like, that is all building a narrative and is interesting. And the world's changed a lot. It is interesting to now look at things like the game Abandoned, which I don't even want to bring up, but I will, Janet, because it's me and you here and it's a safe space. But you know, the reason that that game's getting as much talk is because PlayStation put any focus on it. And again, not E3 stage focus, but the modern version of that to some extent, which is PlayStation blog pushes and all of that. Like, that is the thing where the moment PlayStation puts eyes on you, it's a different level of eyes. It's a different conversation all of a sudden. And that's not necessarily marketing budget, but it is marketing strategy with partnerships. And that's where I'm interested in this, of who ends up partnering with them and how does that end up looking like. And I think that they're in a better position because my gut tells me PlayStation is not going to be pushing this next project the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're, oh God, I don't know if I want to say you're probably around that, but I think that is a prediction that's definitely based on what we've seen prior. Like, I don't know that they'd be wanting to like go out and do it in the same way. I feel like it's going to be like everything we did before, we're going to do the opposite. Like, what's the opposite of a talk show, a podcast? I don't know. But yeah, I'll be interested to see what their vision is, especially given what like No Man's Sky is. It's a little hard to almost imagine something more ambitious than like space in the universe. So I'm very curious as to what they are going to do and where like their passions lie, especially with, again, Last Campfire, obviously a very different game and a different genre entirely. But I feel like I don't have a read on like where their interests are. Like, I know No Man's Sky, but then I know Last Campfire. Those are like, those don't really fit together. So it's like, what are we going to see out of this? I have no idea, but I'm super interested to see what it ends up being. And there's definitely a lot of hype for Outlaws too. It actually got mentioned to me like yesterday. I was like talking to friends and they're like, oh, like, I think I'm going to go back into No Man's Sky because I can be, you know, a pirate in space and stuff. And like, there's just been I've had that conversation several times over the years of people jumping back into No Man's Sky for different things. And I think that speaks to the power of the updates they have and like how diverse and different they all are. And to finally, to close out, let's go ahead and take a little blast from the past. Fez is 10 years old. Phil Fish resurfaces for a rare interview. This comes over from Eurogamer and dropped earlier today, written by Rupert Perchez or Perchez. And this is interesting because basically he sets up this interview and he's like, I, you know, had done some work, like some articles and content celebrating Fez. And I figured I'd hit up Fish because, you know, like maybe we can get a quote, like kind of editorial due diligence. But I had no... I did not expect him to ever answer, but then he was like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, well, let's talk. Let's do a little interview. So nothing too like mind blowing out of this, but I wanted to pull a couple things that I thought were amusing or interesting. And then a few things that are a little bit more, you know, headline-y that people might end up pulling from this and talk about. But so anyway, interviewing Phil Fish, these aren't all the questions, but they're some of the ones that I want to highlight. Are you marking the 10th anniversary of Fez in any ways? The question Phil Fish answers, I'm planning a quiet evening of drinking and crying. Other question. When you see Fez there before you, either literally or figuratively, what do you see? Do you see imperfections or achievement you're rightfully proud of? And are there things you would change? Phil Fish responds, a little bit of both. I have a few regrets, mostly things I'd like to remove. If I ever make a director's cut, I'll be the rare director's cut with less stuff in it, which like I just feel, you know what, let's go ahead and just jump in between these and get as far into this interview as we can. I love that mention. I think it's really funny. This also just totally fits, like, not that I know Phil Fish personally, but like many people, I found out about Phil Fish through Indie Games, the movie, which like I was like every other basic person where I'm like, I got into Indie Games through Indie Games, the movie. And like, you know, whatever, like that is my truth. I like went on Steam and like itch.io and I haven't like turned back since. But like one of the things that stood out from that was how like kind of, you know, quirky and weird I think a lot of the developers were in different ways. And hearing him say that, I just love this conversation because I feel like he's being so himself and like, I'm just here to have a chat. And I also like the director's cut thing just from like the PlayStation side where we keep seeing director's cuts. And I just think it'd be hilarious for them to release a Fez director's cut with less content.
Well, I mean, I think that especially with video games, because of how vast they tend to be, that a director's cut cutting the things that didn't work is often less egregious than if you were to do that for like a 2-hour movie or something like that. And I'm sure, I mean, people do that. There's fan edits of movies that cut out a bunch of the bullshit and trying to make something better out of it all the time. But it reminds me of like Wind Waker HD on the Wii U, of like the changes that made. I mean, technically they cut a lot of stuff. There's a lot less hours you have to play that game to complete it, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's continue on with the question. Are there any secrets still to be discovered in Fez? Any Easter eggs or mysteries people haven't solved? Fish responds, I'm not sure. I don't often keep tabs on that, but last I checked, there were still a couple things that had yet to be elucidated, which also, that's a $10 word. Like, yeah, I'm damn. Only 80% sure I said that word right. That's like a context clues SAT-ass word to throw in there. And that's very satisfying to me, he continues. I hope it stays that way a long time. Some of the theories people come up with are amazing, though. People have stumbled upon some truly unbelievable coincidences that sure seem like they are a thing, and I'm not about to confirm or deny them, which I also think is, like, really cute of, like, letting people just have the game and make it for what they will. And the idea of their, you know, again, he says he's not, like, you know, documenting all this, like, as his full-time job or anything. But the idea that there's still more out there, I think, is really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 has so many Easter eggs in it. And James Gunn is the king of Easter eggs. And to this day, there's one Easter egg that he's like, no one's found it out yet. And it's like become this like huge thing on the internet of like, who's going to crack the case? Who's going to find the final Easter egg? So I love that stuff. And I hope that it's MT because he deserves it.
Yeah. Next up, we have one thing that stuck with me while playing Fez was how timeless it felt. And I suppose that's something you can never gauge until it's been around for a while, like, say, a decade. To me, Fez does fall into the same category as those Nintendo games, Mario's and otherwise. I remember you saying inspired you. How does that make you feel to hear? Fish says, it's very flattering, but I don't know if it's true. That's like me grilling one great steak and calling myself a steak master. I think it owes a lot of that feeling of timelessness to the games that inspired it. The fact that pixel art is still around and has kind of always been at some point. I don't think it only plays as a retro nostalgia thing. Good pixel art is still coming out all the time and feels so contemporary. Definitely never expected it to have that kind of longevity, though. I'm forever surprised by that. Which I think is like a very like modest, but also kind of accurate take. And I feel like I also see Fez in a lot of games. Like, admittedly, I haven't seen Fez through to completion. But playing Captain Toad, I'm like, okay, this is cute, simpler Fez of just kind of rotating around these areas. And I think a lot of conversation has been resurged about Fez, not just because of the anniversary, but playing Tunic and kind of feeling some of those angles based on like, yeah, the isometric vibes and the exploration. Yeah, for sure. And then I think this is close to last, so I'll probably just put these two to close out. We have, I think it's really lovely that even 10 years later, people are still excited about the idea of Fez 2. It's a testament to the game you made. Do you ever feel the pull to return to it? To which he responds, yes. I just need $200 million, 5,000 developers for 15 years to bring my grandiose vision to life. Which I feel he also does have a vision. I'm like, is it the same vision Sean Murray has? Can we get a collab, a crossover? You know? The ultimate Kickstarter to end all Kickstarters.
Oh, God.
And then finally, similarly, do you ever feel the pull to return to making games? Are you done making them? I'm constantly making games and canceling every single one of them before they're even announced, which I feel like...
That's real.
Yes. Like, I think this is him being like, I'm making stuff and just never telling you, and I'm drinking my wine as time passes me. Like, I love this for him. Like, especially, again, in so long ago, Indie Games, the movie, but like, there was some truly... wild shit in that film about I think how hard it is to make games, and like seeing the, like, I get secondhand stress watching that documentary. If you haven't seen it in a while, I implore you to go back and rewatch it because it's a lot. But yeah, I mean, I love seeing that there's like the fact that he also doesn't feel like he has to make it either, I think is really cool, and kind of gives him the space to like create out of need, out of desire, and not out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
But Fez 2 is so far away because it's probably not ever going to come to light. If I want to know what's coming to mom and grop shops, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
See, I remembered it because I added silly jingle time, though I also deleted the way to lead into the other part. So it was like half good, half bad. Out today, we got a lot. We got Bunny Macho, sure, okay. Switch. Bush Hockey League for Switch, question mark. Cat Cafe Manager, Switch PC. Crime Site for PC. Death Park 2 for Switch. I think it's okay if you didn't play Death Park 1, if that exists. God of Protectors, Cart of Darkness for Switch. Inner Voices for Switch. Labyrinth of the Chaka King for Switch. Nobody Saves the World, PS5 and PS4 and Switch. Pinball Freedom on Switch. Pretty Girls Rivers on PS5, PS4 and Switch. Road 96, PS5, PS4, Series X/S and Xbox One. Rotund Rebound on Switch, Run the World in Between on Switch and PC, Shooting Star Island on Switch, Sock Venture on Switch, Tape Unveil the Memories, PS4, PC, and 2D and Top D on Switch. And just really quick, I want to shout out a couple of these because I, you know, a lot of times when I read these lists, it's like a bunch of games that maybe I am not super familiar with because a lot of games come out that we never get the chance to play because time is limited. Nobody Saves the World, I really loved. I know it was kind of, you know, mixed, I think, for some people. But I really, really enjoyed playing that earlier this year. I have that in my top 10 games of the year currently. I had a blast doing it multiplayer. I think it also helps with some of like the difficulty spikes. You can kind of cheese your way through things. But I found it super fun, like mixing and matching the abilities. You can be a slug that shoots arrows in that game. I feel like if that doesn't sell you, then maybe it's not for you. Road 96, I also loved it. I haven't finished it yet. I started playing on Steam, so I'm wondering if I'll just continue it out on there. But this is a procedurally generative, like, narrative road trip game, which is super interesting. And, like, you know, I feel like this is said a lot for this genre, but it really does feel like you feel the weight of your choices. I think there's also a lot of, like, lightness and, like, beauty and then, but also, like, darkness in that game in terms of just, like, what it's like in the world and what kind of problems the people you meet on the road might have. I think it also does a really good job exploring like the grayness of morality. Like at one point, it's like you're crossing like the border and you're like gotta hide underneath a truck, but you have to decide if you're like going there or under a box. And then it's like, do I steal from this thing? Do I not? Like there's like a lot of little things like that, but also moments where you just like sit down by a campfire and like hear someone play a banjo or something while you're just like, you know, barely eating anything because you're on the road. So I really love that game, and I feel like not enough people talked about it when it came out last year, myself slightly included. I just didn't finish it, so I couldn't say too much more to praise it. And then 2D and Top D is one I beat last year on PC. It's coming to Switch. I also did a review on it over on my site, Pen to Pixels. I like this game a lot. If you like puzzle platformers, play this. It's awesome. My only beef with the game really is that the bosses are kind of insanely hard to me, but there's also like a difficulty where you can just like nerf your way through it by taking zero damage. So, and that also helps if you get stuck on puzzles, because you could just like decide, you know what, I'm not going to do this, and I'm just going to like walk through the obstacle instead of, you know, solving it. So I really think that that difficulty option helps both with kind of a balance issue I feel with the bosses, and then also just like a puzzle issue that you might personally have playing it, because we all get stuck on different things. So 2D and Tap D, and then the weird shtick there is you're both 2D and 3D, so like there's one character that's in 2D and one that's like top down 3D, and you kind of work together to move objects and solve puzzles, and all of it's like one screen kind of setup. So you just move from like point A to point B, and you know, it starts out really simple and then it scales up. So yeah, if that sounds interesting to you, I implore you to go check it out. That game's really cool. And then that's about all that we have. I do want to give a quick shout out too for reader mail. Nano wrote in, aka the nanobiologist, who y'all know if you roll here regularly, especially in the chat, and had this to write in. A success story from 2 days ago. On Tuesday, I went in to surgery for a laparoscleft gastrectomy, aka got part of my stomach removed. This was a doctor recommended procedure to help me lose weight, something I've been struggling with for years. Tim shouted out my Twitter post about me going in, and let me just say, the love and support from all of the KFBFs, people I talk to in the Twitch chat daily, and those I've never met before, was amazing. Thank you to the KFBFs for being so kind and supportive. You seriously helped me stay on track with all post-op requirements and to excel in my day one recovery. I'm back home now, safe and sound with my fiance, helping to take care of me during this first week, which when not on good meds, feels like I did a 4 to 6 hour ab workout nonstop. Holy cow. This really is the best community on the planet. And yeah, just like shout out to that. It's definitely something I was keeping track of too, because, you know, I follow Nano and like we've worked together a few times on like TikTok and stuff. And yeah, I love that. I'm, you know, the internet's not always the best place. Obviously, it's part of, you know, humanity, which has its flaws, but it really means a lot to me when I can be part of, you know, a platform and a community where those connections can happen. I feel like even if only one or two or 2,000, like those are all super meaningful. And I feel like it adds just so much additional value. Obviously, I think there's value in talking about games like as an art and like a hobby and like something that has been a part of my life since I was 5. But this honestly means like so much more to me than that, and that already means a lot. So thank you for writing in and sharing like that positivity, and I'm glad that us and other people in the chat could do that for you, Nano. So, you know, wishing you well in your recovery.
Hell yeah, man. Give those dogs some love for me, okay, Nano?
And now, as the community turns, you're wrong. Let's see what they're yelling at us about. Okay. Yeah. Peridot is a French word pronounced peridot. I don't know if that's right, but I did read it, so we'll see. Okay, other things. Something about Sora. I feel like we're just going to leave that alone. the ride that Janet is thinking of Universal, also from Nano. Shout out to Nano. Still there, despite the recovery. Fort Shrek 4D. It's now closed. I thought it was, but then I honestly had really quick IP paranoia. I'm like, does that line up? And then would people be like, how do you not know where Shrek is from? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like, are Megan like gaslit by Shrek fans? Like, I just didn't want to risk it. So, you know,
not on this Thursday.
I've been rocking with Shrek from day one, okay? VHS. Like, I've been there. I've been in it.
Speaking of that, did you see yesterday that some members of Blue Sky Studios reunited to animate one last thing for Ice Age?
No.
And it was the squirrel finally getting the nut.
Nice.
I know. Really after 20 years, Tim.
For him. The Ice Age was also really good. That was like a fun era of time, watching all those films. Anyway, continuing on, just to close out, tomorrow's hosts, Bless and Tim. Tim, they really got your work in here today and tomorrow.
They do, man. They do. I think I've been on, I'm going to be on 4 days this week.
We're like passing the baton, because like I was on yesterday and today, and then we're like, you know, pivoting over to close out the week.
That's great. Tim week, baby. Let's go.
If you're watching live on Twitch after this, it's Fortnite with Nick, Andy, Mike, and Kevin. And if you want to catch that later, subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those who are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.